Blog Talk Radio.
Coming to you since 1997 on KKUP Radio with over 250 guests and still going strong in their 12th year of weekly broadcasting, the International Taz and Paula Show brings to you expansive, engaging, and groundbreaking intensity on radio and now on the internet airwaves today. Listen live every Thursday or visit Embracing Mother Earth's archives, exclusive articles, ask questions, and receive actual answers from guests anytime at TazandPaulaShow.com. Taz and Paula's special guests are experts coming from all walks of life, energizing our lives with a passion that inspires and teaches us with each of their compelling personal life journeys, with roots from ancient wisdom and bridging it with modern science. We hope today's show touches the wisdom of your heart. And now, Taz and Paula.
Well, good morning. This is Paula Nunes, and we're waiting for Taz to come on the line. I'll put some music on until she gets here. Just a moment.
Hi, Paula. Are you there?
Yes, I am.
Okay.
Just a moment. I thought our guest came on, but she went off again, so just a moment.
Okay.
I'll start out. You're listening to the Taz and Paula Show, and I'm Paula.
And I'm Taz.
So today we have a great guest. It's Mahala Gale. For years, Mahala has compared revelations and astrology and how everything aligns. And she says they are right in step with each other in all that she has observed. Taz, this is really going to be an exciting show.
It is. Well, we were so captivated by Mahala Gale's eloquent writing and could not let her get by without an interview. So I quickly emailed her and she said yes. To let you all know, she's an astrologer, writer, lecturer, minister, one of the founders of Asclepius Light Center, the editor of Asclepius Light Center newsletter since 1988, and writer-editor of Planet Alert articles. And as you may know, Mahala's article has appeared in many Planet Alert publications over the years. And today, she'll be bringing an in-depth look at astrology and what's on the horizon for the new year.
Well, that was certainly a mouthful, wasn't it? Mahala has been studying the science of astrology since the early 1980s, which has allowed her to become an expert in mundane astrology, which is a study of world events. Over the years, her tracking of the planets in connection with their relationship to earthquakes, floods, storms, volcanic eruptions, and other natural phenomena, as well as man-made phenomena such as war, enhances her abilities as an expert mundane astrologer. Mahala Gale has also extensively studied the Book of Revelation in the Bible. From that study, she has been able to correlate the Bible and its relationship with the stars. She's appeared in many local TV programs discussing the topic in depth. After watching predicted events transpire one after another, she came to the conclusion that there is a master plan in action, and a path to understanding that master plan is through astrology. Evidence that astrology is a path to understanding this plan, it's been demonstrated by the history of Jesus. The science of astrology has held in high esteem during the time of Jesus as a wise man, also known as a magi, who visited Jesus shortly after his birth and were known to be astrologers. Mahala, we are so happy to have you with us today, and I have to, it's going to be great to start out a new year with Mahala being with us, or in this year, let's say it that way. Let me see if she's with us. Oh, yes, she is.
Well, we're really happy to have her here with us, helping us to usher it in, because this is the day that's pretty close by to New Year's Eve. Welcome, Mahala. Are you there?
Yes, I'm here. Thank you very much for inviting me to be on your program today.
Well, our listeners are waiting with bated breath here to know what's coming around the corner for the new year. Can you give us some welcoming snapshots?
Well, I guess we could start out with what the planets are doing. There's been lots of major events that have gone on that are leading up to the year of 2011. And I know a lot of people have been in total trauma and stuff like that, you know, which has been very difficult for them. But my job is to encourage people to get into the vibration of being happy and magic, because the new energy, or the fifth dimension energy, is one of magic and happiness. And it's such a nice place to be. And so if you are going through trauma, you know, if there is somehow that you can bring yourself up into the higher vibration, then everything will change in your life. And then, like, there are some changing things that are happening. The planets are moving over. And so from the winter solstice until the spring solstice is kind of like an integration period. And so, like, in January 22nd, Jupiter will go into Aries, and that's a sign of new beginnings. And then when Uranus goes into Aries, which is March, March 12th, I think it is, then that is a planet of change, and that's when things will really change. And so then it will be like a seven-year cycle of new beginnings. And we also have, we're going into a different Chinese year, which is the year of the rabbit, and that starts on February 3rd. And that's a much calmer year than the tiger, metal tiger year that we've been in, because that's been very, very dramatic. And then we also switch to the ninth wave of the Mayan calendar, the way Carl Kellerman does it. And so we have all of these changing planets. And right now, as we speak, Mercury has just turned direct, thank goodness, because you can look and see what the Mercury retrograde did this time, because, I mean, look at the airports and all the travel and the snow and all the accidents because of there being so much snow and everything, and then the lift in Maine falling. That's all a Mercury retrograde thing. Because that's what it brings. And then I thought, oh, wow, like today's the turning day. So it's usually really powerful when it does turn. You know, so I don't know what's up on the agenda for today. But there's also something major that has happened, and that was the eclipse that we just had on December 21st.
Oh, yeah.
And that was an extremely powerful eclipse. And I had a dream, like back in February, and in my dream there was a big party going on the other side, because I know there were a couple of my friends who have left the earth plane were in the dream, and so I knew that the party was on the other side. And then I was told that the ruby red light would be dominant at Christmas time. And then the next thing I was told in the dream was that it was the end of a 26,000-year cycle.
Oh.
And that's major. It's major, you know. And so several years ago, I was given this book on astrology, and in it, it had the last 100 years of the Vedic Kala Yuga cycle, and that showed the cycle ending in 2010. And so there's been, you know, the three different dates. There's been the 2010, the 2011 of the Mayans, Carl Kellerman's way of doing astrology, and then 2012 that's been so prophesized. Well, I think for all the light workers who have been searching and helping the earth move into ascension, I think that it's the turning point for all light workers, this eclipse was. And so that is a major cycle. And also, I had gotten this email. It talked about the great initiation that went on, was scheduled for the solstice. And so that talks about how the ones who came here to help the earth change and move into love and light, that they had been encoded long time ago with this code in their body. And at this particular solstice is when the code would be activated. And this is kind of like going into the light, you know. And so I think that's really exciting. So we now have the opportunity to move and manifest a higher frequency energy.
Wow,
that's exciting.
I don't know about you, Paula, but on on the 21st, in the late part of the evening, every now and then, Jesus has come into my life, and it's usually when I'm not feeling well. But he actually came into my light where I could see him, and it was a real blessing. I mean, I'm feeling well, I'm doing well, and everything. But I knew something had really changed. It's really a magnificent time, and
I had an experience with that too. That is like I had been sent the USGS charts of the earthquakes that were going on from December 21st to December 25th. Mm-hmm. And the charts, instead of just having one line, going up and down like it does when you have your heart checked or something like that, you know, they show mm-hmm. the cardiograph, and the earthquake thing is the same like that. Well, all of the charts for those days were all black. And so I was looking at that, wow, something, and major is going on, and it was saying, and they were from all over the world. And so it was like the earth was ringing like a bell, and there were quakes going on everywhere. And so when I was looking at that, I asked, and I said, what in the world is going on? And then I saw a vision of Jesus, and he was holding the earth in the palms of his hands, and he said that we just had a pole shift, but nobody knew about it. And so divine intervention had come in and taken over. And so I thought, wow, that is major. So everything can really change now.
My goodness.
Oh, wow.
Yes.
The veils are opening?
Yes. Yeah. Well, actually, the veils have been opening since October 31st. And that's another event, major event that happened. I live here in Seattle, and right down the hill from me, there was a workshop by Tom Kenyon. And do you know who Tom Kenyon is?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yes.
Yeah. Okay, so he does the sound healing part. And so there were, at this workshop, there were 500 people, and on the internet, there were 500,000 people that tuned into the workshop. And the object of the workshop was opening the halls of Amenti, which is your pineal gland, you know, where the light comes in, and also to connect with Egypt and open the halls of Amenti in Egypt. And so with all those people gathered together at 3 o'clock on Sunday afternoon on October 31st, it was totally amazing. And that's when I moved into fifth dimension energy. And it was like I was in bliss, and I stayed in bliss for about 3 weeks afterwards. And I've still been in it. You know, there's days when, you know, they kind of go down a bit, but then I always come back up. And so being in that energy is just wonderful. It's just a energy of magic, like the Harry Potter series. And this is what we're moving into, the magic and the miracles. And also, because the workshop was held right down the hill from me, when I moved into this house, I discovered that there's some kind of strange energy down in the valley. And so I came to find out that, about 4 or 5 years ago, I had gone into the shopping mall that's down there on Halloween at about 6 o'clock at night on Halloween. And all of a sudden, I started being pulled out of my body, and I thought, wow, what is going on? You know, and I don't want this to happen in the middle of a shopping center. And so I hurried out the door and went back to my car, and then I had, I always carry some kind of food in my car, and so I ate a candy bar to bring me back down to earth, and I thought, wow, what was that all about? And so then the next year, I had, you know, kind of wasn't paying attention to that it was Halloween again. And so I went down, and this time I went into Target, And the same thing happened to me. And that's when I really started wondering, well, what in the world is going on here? And then I was given the answer that there's a Stargate down there. Well, where this workshop was held was at the hotel right next to the Target store.
Mm-hmm.
And so it was right on top of the Stargate. And so apparently this Stargate connects with the Stargate over in Egypt. And so with all of the people from all over the world, you know, meditating together on this, it totally opened.
It was a great meditation. Yeah.
Oh, yes. Did you join us?
Yes.
With that?
Yeah. It was beautiful.
Oh, yes, it was. Yes. And I hope you went into the fifth dimension energy after that, too, because it was just so awesome.
Yeah, it was incredible.
And I've never heard anyone when tone, you know, like he does. We went through a whole process, like it started on Friday night, and then we opened up our heart chakra, you know, on the Friday night thing. And then on Saturday morning, he did a process of clearing the bones, you know, and I had never even thought about clearing your bones, you know, and then clearing all the chakras and everything. And so for the first Friday night, Saturday, and then Sunday morning, we're all the process of clearing out our chakra system so we could be ready for the opening of the halls of Amenti within our body. And so that was pretty awesome. And then I found out that a friend of mine, I knew she was going to Egypt, but I didn't know that was right before this event happened. And so someone else had told me that the pyramids are now totally opened and light is coming out, you know, from the top of the pyramids, and that this is calling in our space friends, you know, because it's like, okay, the Earth is ready now. You know, we can interact with them. And we haven't been able to because there's been like the lower level, you know, because we've gone through the fourth dimension since 1987, and that's a level where everything happens, where the war in space goes on, the war in Earth goes on. And so that's been a very, very difficult time period for everyone. And that was basically the time when we had to clean out and look at all of our dark stuff within us and release all that so we could be prepared for this particular time in 2010 when we reach the end of the 26,000-year cycle. And we'll can now manifest as pure beings of light to bring in this wonderful new age that we're about to enter or have entered.
Now,
and so now it's just the
Mahala.
Yes,
pardon? I was going to say, yeah, Mahala. Let me. You know, I was so excited to know that you had spent some time comparing the Book of Revelations in the Bible to astrology. And I'm thinking about this particular moment in time that we're talking about now. Is there anything in Revelations that correlates to what is taking place?
Right now? Mm-hmm. Well, yes, there is. I can go back, like the 17th and 18th chapter was the war in Babylon, which was a 7-year war in Iraq, you know, which was over this year, you know. And then the 19th chapter is when the space beings, my interpretation, when the space beings start appearing big time, and that has been happening really a lot. And there's also, like, huge ships that have been seen up by the sun, you know, by the Hubble Space Telescope.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's all kinds of ships that have come in. And so, but like I said, we have to reach the frequency of the higher light ships in order to communicate with them. And so we have now, or the light workers in the earth, have now reached that point where we can communicate with these higher beings. And so I'm sure that they'll become more and more so available shortly. And then the 20th chapter is, in my interpretation, is the downfall of the controllers. And so that has been going on, like with the WikiLeaks coming out, you know, and Jesse Ventura, who's been on regular TV, exposing all of the conspiracy theories and what's actually been going on.
Mm-hmm.
And And so it's been big time of the people being aware of what has really been going on the earth. And so that is the end of Revelations, because the 21st and 22nd is all about the new heaven and the new earth. And I had seen, several years ago, I saw a picture of the new earth, or a vision of it, and it was beautiful. It was all lush and green, and there weren't any cars, and there was a transportation system, you know, that was kind of like rapid transit. But the houses and everything were nestled within the trees, and they had flowers, and it was just absolutely gorgeous. And so that's basically what's kept me going writing my Planet Alert all these years, because I know that that's on the agenda for us, and it's real fast approaching.
Hmm. Now, when our space friends come in, depending on everyone's vibration, can some people see it and communicate where others can't?
Yes, yes. And, you know, like when, I mean, a lot of people say that we're just entering the fourth dimension, but I say that we entered it in 1987 when the harmonic convergence happened, because it was after that when the psychic realm became so open to everyone. You know, before that, you could hardly speak about anything, you know, concerning anything psychic or spiritual or metaphysical. And then all of a sudden, after 1987, everything started to change. And then people started seeing things that they'd never seen before, you know, like different people from different dimensions and all kinds of stuff, which has continued. And if you listen to the Coast to Coast program that's been on for so long, you know, all of this was brought out into the open. And so the people, you know, because we went into a different frequency, people were able to see things that they couldn't see before. And now, because we're moving into this higher frequency of the fifth dimension, or maybe even the sixth, or maybe even higher, we will be able to see things that we haven't been able to see. And I was told another thing a while back, and that was that, like, the Earth would be going through a black hole and coming out a different dimension, and then we would be on the new Earth at that time. Right. And I've wondered about that. And then I had just gotten an email from a friend of mine who had a friend who had this major vision. And the reason that his vision was in 2005. And the reason that she sent me this vision, which I had read way back in 2005 too, but I had forgotten about it. And in his vision, he saw the same thing, and he saw that Jesus would be holding the world in his hands, and that the God force would be working through him, you know, to change the world. And that was a divine intervention, and so that apparently just happened with this eclipse. And then he also said in there that the Earth would be going through this black hole, and when it came out, we'd be in the new Earth, you know. And I thought, well, wow, that's the same thing I was told many years ago. And do you remember? Did you ever see the movie, you know, Walt Disney movie about going through the black hole?
No,
I
love it.
I think it was just the black hole. And so they had it was about these spaceships that were getting ready, and they were getting ready to go through this black hole, and they didn't know what they would experience. And then the whole movie was about the drama of going through this black hole, and then they came out into a different dimension. And so I thought, you know, wow, that is just like what I had seen a long time ago. So I guess we'll see if that works out or not. But
I wonder if that's like going through the photon belt.
Well, you know, it could be. It could be. I don't know. I hadn't thought about that.
Yeah, as you were talking about that, that's what exactly went through my head.
Uh-huh, yeah. But we are at the time of communication with our space friends and start manifesting the new heaven and the new earth. Oh, and in his reading, he said that everything was totally cleaned up as we went through the black hole. And, well, actually, the photon belt is black light, come to think about it.
So,
because it's ultraviolet light, and that appears as black light.
It kind of reminds me of, you know, the alteration. Like you said, everything's all cleaned up. It's as if our DNA and our genetics and our meridians and all these things are being cleaned as we go through and altered. And then, you know, we end up in the earth and us match.
Right, yeah.
Energies,
yeah. But it couldn't happen until this particular time because we had to go through the process of, you know, for many years cleansing our body. And so we could, you know, release all of the old stuff so we can be sparkling and clean and be ready for it.
Now, is everybody going to be ready or there's just the people that have been working on themselves will...
I think that this particular time, I think that there's kind of like a division of, I think that that's totally, you know, like maybe what 2012 is about, that because like the Bible says that one third will be cleansed and transformed, you know, and then they'll be able to do all the magic stuff, and then they'll be able to help other people through it. And so that might be, so there might be like the... that might be why there's three different dates. It might be like three different waves, you know, like the first wave being activated at this December solstice, and then the second wave, and then the third wave in 2012. I think that that's a real possibility. But right now, I think that's probably a third of the earth that's being transformed into the light as we speak.
I was wondering, in January 1st, here we go, you know, January is the first month, and then, you know, January 1st is the first also, and then it's 2011, so we have all these 11s, or 1s and 11s.
Right,
and I'm
yes,
thinking,
that's true.
Wow, isn't that incredible? I mean, you're talking about, I mean, the whole day has 11s and 1 p.m., so I'm kind of thinking, what's
right,
going to
yeah,
happen
yeah.
January 1st? You know?
Right. So if you add up the numbers in Jesus, that adds up to 11, you know. And so that's why they've always said, well, that's the master number, you know, and that's the number of Jesus. And so, which his true name is Yeshua, but we've always, you know, called him Jesus because of, well, whatever. And so that vibrates to the 11, too. So if you look at it as a Christ consciousness, then... we have the whole year of Christ consciousness ahead of us. And there was an eclipse, a total solar eclipse in England on August 11th of 1999. And at that particular time, the planets formed the cross in the fixed signs, which is Taurus, Leo, Scorpio, and Aquarius. And the sun was on the degree of Christ consciousness, which is 18 degrees Leo, at that time. And so that was the beginning of our real major transformation, you know, from 1999 to up until now. And on November 9th of 1998, the Earth first went to zero magnetics because it was recorded. And it didn't stay there very long, but it first hit that zero magnetics. And that's when the pole shift first started, in a gradual pole shift, which has gone on since up until now. And that's the year that Edgar Cayce said that it would start. And so people think, well, he was wrong, you know, it didn't happen. But it did happen. And we've been shifting ever since then. And then when another one of the shifts happened, I always feel them because I get really dizzy. And so when that happens, the airplanes, and then they have to redo their maps because the magnetic energy has been off, and they've done that several times since 1999.
Yeah.
And so when the Earth moves, you know, it's kind of like you're walking like you're on a ship or whoever feels it, you know, which is the way it affects me. And there was one time that it happened, which I think this was 2 years ago, in September. I got so dizzy. I was dizzy for a whole week from it shifting, and I thought, wow, this is really, really major stuff. And I knew there wasn't anything going on with my body, you know, it was just feeling the shift. And sure enough, shortly after that, they came out and said, well, the airlines had all changed their magnetic maps again. And so that's a sign to me that it actually happened.
Is there anything happening in May of 2011?
Well, you know, I haven't really looked forward to May. I've heard a lot of people mention that day. I heard that that was be the time when Nemesis, the planet, was supposed to be closest to Earth. And then, but there's been a whole lot of controversy on that. And so I don't know if that's still on the agenda or not, or if we shifted it by going into the pole shift like we did. I just don't know that yet. But I know that March is a big, big month with all of the energy changing. And, oh, also on this December 21st eclipse, the moon was red. And so, oh, that's all part of the Bible prophecies, too. It says when the moon becomes like blood, you know, red like blood, that's when the changes happen. And one of the major things that people, astrologers, don't really pay enough attention to, I don't think, but it's the node. And the node has been extremely important in the prophecies. And so for the past, well, it takes a year and a half for the node to go through one sign. And so the node moves out of Capricorn into Sagittarius on March 3rd, I think it is. And then it goes into Sagittarius because the node goes backwards.
Wow.
And so when the node has been in Capricorn, what Capricorn rules is, it rules, first of all, it's an earth sign, and so it rules earth events, earthquakes, it rules our government, it rules control issues, it rules structures, and many, many structures have gone down in the earthquakes and the floods and everything. And the node hadn't been in Capricorn very long when the Haitian earthquake happened. And so that was many, many, many structures going down. And then we had the earthquake in Colombia. So this is the manifestation of the node in Capricorn. And so when the node changes in March and goes into Sagittarius, then it will be a different vibration. And it will be one because Sagittarius rules the higher mind. It rules religion, per se, or spirituality. It rules teachers, like a lot of teachers coming forward. It rules mountains. It's a fire sign. And so we might have more volcanic eruptions and stuff like that as the node moves into Sagittarius. And right now, the sun is going through Capricorn. And so I thought, oh, I wonder, there was already, as soon as the sun went into Capricorn on December 21st, there was a 7.6 and a 7.3 earthquake in Japan, and there were a couple more, too, in the South Pacific. And so that's all, was all manifestation of the sun moving into the Capricorn sign. And Capricorn also rules bones and teeth and the knees. And I thought, oh, man, I always pick up all the energy of the signs. I've tried not to do that, but I just seem to pick up in my body what's going on with the signs. And so all of a sudden my knees started to hurt, and I thought, where'd this come from, you know? And then I thought, oh, the sun's in Capricorn. Capricorn rules knees. No wonder they're hurting, you know? And so then when the sun moves out of it, then the energy changes, and then goes into Aquarius, and it rules the ankles. And that's how astrology works. And the reason that there has been so many things going on the East Coast, it's because when the Gulf spill happened, the planet Pluto, which is a planet of transformation, was exactly over the Gulf of Mexico. And so that brought in the energy there of the Gulf spill. Which is the second to the last sign of events happening, you know, at the end, as far as I can tell. And so with that, I mean, that was a major thing. And that has actually stopped the Gulf Stream. And so the reason that Europe has been in a deep freeze is because they had the stream, the Atlantic Stream, that would run up the East Coast and then go up to the higher and then down through Europe. And so with the stopping of the Gulf Stream, it also changed the belt, I mean the wind, you know, the what do you call that belt that I forget what the name of it is right now. But anyways, and so the combination.
Current?
Yes. Not the current. That's from the Gulf Stream, but the one that goes in the air, the jet stream.
Oh, jet stream.
Yes, it changed the jet stream. And so that has been coming down, you know, and putting Europe in a deep freeze. But the reason that the East Coast, and so the Galactic Center, because we've had all of this connection with the Galactic Center, and so the Galactic Center on the Earth plane, the main focus of that is comes into right where the Mississippi River runs, you know, the whole longitude line going down the Mississippi River, and that's where the Galactic Center focuses into the Earth. And I was born in Minneapolis, and that's right there, you know, at the where the Galactic Center is. And so they had this bridge and that went down like about 3 years ago. And I thought, oh, my goodness, that was my playground. That's where I grew up, you know. And I thought, well, that's really symbolic, you know. And so being that that's connected with the Galactic Center, it was like symbolic of, okay, the Earth has to change now. You know, it's time for it to go through its major change. And then there's been all kinds of storms coming up through the New Madrid Fault. And I thought that there would be more of an earthquake along the New Madrid, but instead it has been storms so far. It's been storms coming up there and affecting that whole area. And then Capricorn, like right now, because when the planets are in either Capricorn or Cancer, the whole East Coast is affected from the Mississippi River to the coast, East Coast. And so that's why they've been getting so much snow and everything. And so it's really interesting to watch astrology and how it works, because I have this world map on my wall here in my office. And so I put the planets on. I made these little balls that look like planets and put them on the signs that they're in. And what I had done is I took a world map, which is 30 degrees, you know, and then there's 12, 30-degree segments of the longitude. And so I just put the astrology signs in there according to starting with Aries at the international dateline and then moving around the world. And so I can just look at the map and see what's happening. And if something is happening on one side of the world, a corresponding event always happens on the other side of the world because both of them work together. Now, because China is the other side of Capricorn Cancer, they should be getting a lot of snow right now, too, and I think that they are. So, anyways, it's really interesting to just sit here and look to see where the planets are and watch the events happen.
Now, the cold weather, like on the East Coast in Europe, is that helping the oil spill not go further?
I was sent this email, and it's actually pictures that have been taken by the people who do the underwater research, and it is actually shows the Gulf Stream stopped.
So,
and that's pretty amazing. So the current can't go up the East Coast. And so that's why they're getting the cold weather on the East Coast and down through Europe. And up in Norway, too. Norway is having the coldest winter they've had in 222 years.
Wow. Talk about the hand of God.
Maybe that's coming from our prayers and people really working on it.
Yeah.
So basically, you know, it's now our turn. Because once we open up the light, the codes within our body to be able to sec the light and the love, it's now our turn to use our thoughts, you know, and to really focus on the positive and to really focus on being in the new energy because it is wonderful. I know that's hard to do if you're going through a lot of drama, you know, because it's so easy to get caught into the drama and the trauma and just be there, you know, and not be able to step aside and look at what is going on, you know. But that is the secret into getting into the high energy is just to step outside your body and look at what's going on around you and then just make a decision to be in the higher frequency. and then do things that make you happy. You know, like if music can put you in a better mood, then listen to music. Or being around friends that are happy, you know, whatever can pull you into the higher frequency. Because we definitely need to be there now if we're going to bring the earth through its last phase of moving into the higher frequency right now. We need to gather. And then there are all kinds of meditations going on all over the world for January 1st. And I'm hoping that a lot of people will connect to those meditations and focus on love and light and sending it to Earth and to the higher frequency. And maybe that'll pull more people into the higher frequency too.
I was going to say, you said something about March 2011, the Sagittarius, the world goes into Sagittarius. Now,
yes.
Can you say a little more about that, please?
Well, like in Vedic astrology, which I found is very accurate, and then that's why I had been putting in my planet alert that, you know, the Vedic cycle ends in 2010, you know, the end of 2010, so I'll better pay attention to that. And so the Vedic astrology uses a node very much. And so it's just like a major planet being in Capricorn for a year and a half. And so the whole area has been focused on, you know, what I mentioned about the earth changes and the government, and Pluto's in there, which is a transforming planet. And so it's been transforming how we look at the government and bringing all of the old stuff out into people's awareness. And so that is how the node has worked in Capricorn. Now, when we move into the Sagittarius part, it will be different, and it will touch the galactic center again, as the node moves into Sagittarius. And so this will bring us more galactic energy in us. And have you seen the bubbles at the galactic center?
No.
Oh, this happened. Well, it happened right after we did the opening of the House of Amenti in November, just shortly after we did in Halloween, and then in November, someone sent me a picture of the galactic center, and there are two huge bubbles there that form a picture 8, and they're beautiful colors. They're the new age color, which is the rose pink, or kind of like a violet rose pink. It's gorgeous. I should send you the email so you can go in there and look at that, because it's well worthwhile. Well, the energy, what the scientists say about the energy there is that this is from gamma ray energy. And gamma rays is about the highest energy that we can get in our solar system or our universe. And so the galactic center is pouring this energy from those bubbles into the Earth right now. And so we're being immersed in this gamma ray energy. And so every time something hits the galactic center, like it did at the solstice, then all this energy comes pouring in. And that is puts you, if you're not ready to vibrate to it, it puts you in fast speed transformation. And so it's beautiful. Maybe you could put that up on the bubbles up on your website so people can see them. Yeah, because it's really, really, really. And I could also send you the article about the jet stream and the pictures that go with it that they've taken.
Okay. We'll put it up on the website, yeah.
Yeah. And so with the Sagittarius thing, the Sagittarius is an entirely different vibration than Capricorn. And the galactic center is in Sagittarius. And so when the node first goes in there, you know, shortly after it goes in there, the node will be conjuncting the galactic center, and then it will also activate what was set up at this eclipse time, you know? And so it's kind of like, okay, we have from now until maybe till the node hits the galactic center in March to really get our act together. And
well, I think a lot of this meditation that we're doing together is helping the earth changes, soften.
Oh, I definitely think so. I very definitely think so. You know, I think that we've changed it because, like the last prophecies, you know, in like the Revelation, it was war, you know? And I thought, well, you know, I don't really think that that's going to happen because we're above that vibration right now. And so they've been trying to do it, like when they shot that missile off of California, okay. You know, and they're trying to, nobody knew what it was at first, and then they're trying to say it's an airplane and all this other kind of stuff. But the hit I got on that was that they were trying to start a war, and they weren't allowed to. And then at the same time, there was a missile that was headed for Iran, and that was stopped. And then the Korean thing, you know, they've been trying to ignite that into a war, too. And that hasn't been going anywhere yet. You know, I mean, they did their thing. And so I'm hoping that the minor war that they had when they attacked that island was fulfills the prophecy. And I think it might just do that. So that we won't have to go through the last prophecy of a war. Or it could be happening on a lower dimension because there's so many realities that are going on right now that we have a chance of tuning into whatever reality we choose to experience. And so with a lower reality, you know, that's pretty hard to be in right now. And then the higher reality is one of love and light. And when you won't be, if you're in that reality, you won't be affected by the earth changes because you'll be in a higher dimension and will be observing instead of participating. And so with the node going through Sagittarius, I think it's going to open up a lot of people's minds, higher minds, and I think more people will become aware of what's really going on. And the phase I've been hearing lately is I'm not going to take it anymore. What's going on is, you know, I'm just not going to take it anymore. I'm going to come into my power. I refuse to take all of the dark stuff anymore. And I've heard this from several people in just the last few days. Yeah. And so I think, well, wow, this is really good because it's time to come into our power.
So with all this change, are a lot of people actually feeling aches and pains in their bodies? And
oh man, I woke up this morning like I felt like I'd been run over by a truck. and then the pains I was feeling, which I know it's just planetary pain or psychic pain, because it's all the Capricorn stuff. You know, it's my knees, my teeth, my toe, you know, and I thought, oh dear, I pulled into the Capricorn stuff. I have to figure out how to do something to release it because the pain's not real. You know,
well, let me tell you, I'm Capricorn with a Cancer rising. How about
oh,
that
wow.
One? I'm getting it all.
Uh-huh.
And it's so real.
So well, it's what is that? Fear, false evidence appearing real.
So actually, when we transition out, that should smooth out for Paula, shouldn't it? Then?
Yes, right. And when these challenges or the energy surges come in, people do feel it with the signs that they're born in, you know?
Uh-huh.
Like
yeah.
A Capricorn, you'd feel like my energy is, you know, like I said, it's false information appearing real because I know it's just energy pain. But because I'm a Virgo, you know, I feel it in my intestines. And so I got that big time as in December as the planets were squaring my sign, you know? And so then when the planets move off, then I do. And there are some things that people just choose to go through, you know. But when you're watching the planets go through the different things, it's really interesting to see how people are affecting, you know. And so you should be better with the node going into Sagittarius because Sagittarius, it rules like the kidneys and the liver and, you know, stuff like that. So probably move into that aspect instead of the Capricorn things of knees and bones and teeth and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, so look forward to that. Look forward to that program that so it comes in, well, now or at least when the node goes into Sagittarius.
I won't be achy anymore.
right. Yes, yeah. Yeah, and I thought, oh,
well,
man.
Now, you were talking
about... Okay, excuse me. Yeah. Okay, how can I wake up? I'm gonna, let's say I was thinking to myself, okay, I'm gonna be on this radio program. Why did I wake up feeling like I got hit by a truck this morning, you know? And I says, oh man, there must have been an energy surge this morning. Probably, I think that there's supposed to be some magnetic energy hitting the earth about this time, and that always affects my body. And so every time the sun does something, then I feel it big time.
Yeah, I felt it.
I don't know.
Yesterday.
Do you feel the solar energy
yes.
from the solar flare?
Yeah, it was really heavy duty yesterday for me. So,
uh-huh.
I mean, I actually was dizzy for maybe 3 or 4 hours. It was really strange. I'm going, wow, this is big. Whatever's happening, it's big.
Uh-huh. Right, yeah. So whatever happened yesterday and then today, I probably picked it up last night or this morning.
Yeah.
And Mercury did go direct last night, you know, right before midnight. And so that could have been part of it, too, of it stirring up the energy. And, oh, all of the planets are now direct. You know, which is a major thing because so many of them have been retrograde for so long. And so now they've all turned direct.
Ooh.
And, oh, another thing I need to mention, I think, before we close here, is that Saturn is in Libra. And Libra is the balance. And it's a balance between the male and the female. And so this is another thing that we need to do is balance our body between the male and the female energy. And also, Libra rules the lawyers, judges, juries, lawsuits, and all that kind of stuff. And so as soon as Saturn went into Libra, which was, you know, like several months ago, then the lawsuits started to come forward. And I thought, wow, this is just right on time. But then, and Saturn being in Libra, there's something going on Saturn, and I'm wondering if that's not affecting us too, because it's like a major storm is going on, and Saturn has always been the controlling planet. Saturn rules Capricorn.
Right.
And so
right.
Now with this major storm going on, and this, you can see this too from the Hubble pictures, it shows a huge, huge area on there where something, it looks like something hit Saturn, and caused this like an eruption and moved into a storm. And so that is changing, I think, the frequency of Saturn,
wow.
You know, to let us free from the karmic cycle.
Wow.
That's right, because Saturn rules the karmic cycle.
Yes, because it's been the karmic lord.
Hmm.
And it rules Capricorn.
So that's
so
good.
Maybe
good
people should be... Yeah, people
yeah,
may be
right.
You know, talking more better to each other and this kind of thing, right?
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Right. And so those are major things that are going on, you know, and it seems like it's all coming together right now, you know, and so it's like we're on fast speed. I mean, the time is going by so fast. I can't believe that we've already gone through 2010. You know, it seems like we just started it. And here we are, you know, at the end of it. And so time is really speeded up. And what makes time speed up is the faster, the higher frequency you vibrate to, the faster time goes. And, oh, I think that, like, 2012 is the end of time as we know it.
Oh,
and so,
okay. Instant karma.
And, yes, right. And so I think that that's why so many people were have been picking up the 2012 thing, you know, because I do believe that that's the end of time. And because...
Now, Gail,
oh, yeah, okay.
Mahala, let me just let people know that if they want to contact you, they can contact you through an email, planetalert@hotmail.com.
Yes,
and
that's
is,
right.
Is that email address also on your website?
You know, I don't think it is.
Okay, so
the website to go into is actually my blog,
you know,
which would be the www.mahalasastrology.com,
okay.
Because I try to keep that up with new stuff on there, but I haven't been able to do it much in December because I have been so busy, I just haven't gotten to it, you know, but I'm hoping that I can update it more, and then I need to write my article for the first of the year, too, and hope to get that up within, like, a couple days here.
Well,
I don't
Mahala,
know if I'll make it or not.
I was going to say, Mahala is M-A-H-A-L-A and with an S, so it's mahalasastrology.com.
Yes. .com, yeah. But if
now,
you're
Mahala,
on the attitude, excuse
do you
me?
Do individual readings, or...?
No, I just don't have time for doing those anymore. You know, I just, my life is just too busy. I just can't do them right at the minute. But if they would like to be on my newsletter list, you know, just send me an email, saying mailing list, to my Planet Alert, and I'll add them to my email list.
Okay. All right. So planetalert@hotmail.com.
Yes.
And if anybody fails and they want to get them, you can always head to our website, TazandPaulaShow.com, and
yeah,
send us an
there.
Email, and we'll connect you. Yeah. Oh, my gosh. This is
now,
really. Go ahead.
I was going to say, a lot of our listeners are from California. Do you see any major changes in California? We're getting a new governor and all our storms and everything. Do you see any major changes for California?
You know, a lot of people have been saying, oh, it's going to be a major earthquake and stuff like that there. But, you know, I think that your major change just happened with all of the rain that was there. You know, and so I think that, you know, I think that everything has changed. And I don't see California, like, falling into the ocean or any such thing, you know. And I think that there was enough energy from that storm, you know, to cleanse a lot of things. Because even though the storm just hit like a certain part of California, you know, a storm is a cleansing, and it encompasses a larger area than strictly the area where the storm hits. And so I think that that took off a lot of the pressure of California, and incidentally, California was one of the main points of the eclipses, you know, the lunar eclipse, because the lunar eclipse was seen all over the United States, you know, and then with the planetary things, it triggers events, and then we'll have the solar one coming up here on January 4th, which we didn't really have time to get into. But I think that I don't see anything really major for California happening. I could be wrong, you know, but because we're in the higher energy, if it happens, it'll be on the lower frequency Earth, I think.
Well, and I think there's a major cleansing in our government policies, too, so that's going to be good.
Oh, yes, that's part of the Pluto and Capricorn government's transformation. And we didn't even get into the government type of thing, and there's going to be a whole transformation in our government thing, too, coming up, because we have all the new congressmen and everything. And people have been talking about our president, too, and I don't know how people feel about him, you know. But if I have just a couple seconds here, I could read just a couple sentences of the Mayan signature for Barack Obama.
Okay.
And
yeah.
Pardon?
Go ahead.
Okay, so he's Ben is a Red Skywalker, and that's a time-space traveler who can jump dimension to assist you in realizing heaven on Earth. Ben is unlimited in form, but often chooses the form of the angelic messenger. Ben represents Cain, the pillars in the fields of the world that grow towards heaven, straight and strong. Cain is a Skywalker staff, the staff of balance on Earth, whose many uses support all and build upon the foundation created by humanity. And so we have the right president in the right place for the changes that we're going through.
Well, everything's in perfect order.
Yes, it is, and I think that that's awesome, and I'm really excited about life. I mean, like most of us, or a lot of us, have been waiting so many years for this particular time, and the new energy feels so good, and I just want to stay there all the time, you know. Even if the aches and pains come, you know, you can still feel good in your mind, and so I'm just really excited about the future.
That sounds really good. I'm going to tell you, you know, it's been so great having you with us. And you know what? I guess what we need to do is start laughing at ourselves, right?
Yes, definitely. Definitely. And events that happen in your life, instead of getting stressed out and traumatized, just look at it from a different dimension and just start laughing.
And take a walk in the forest or a walk along the beach.
And connect with nature. And connect with the core of the earth.
Well, we've enjoyed having you with us today. Let's give out Mahala's email once more so people can contact her. It's planetalert@hotmail.com. Is that correct?
Yes. Thank you very much.
And we enjoyed
it. It's been a real pleasure being on your program.
Well, thank you for helping us walk our spiritual journey in a whole new light. And it's been really fun.
Yeah, I think it has.
So we'll have to have you on again. Thank you.
Right. And just remember to go into the magic and miracles.
That's a great message.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Yes.
So have a great day.
And you too.
Okay.
And bye for now.
Bye.
Bye-bye, Mahala.
Well, we're going on to a next segment of our show.
Paula, give me 1 second, okay?
Okay.
Hello.
Hello.
Is this Paula?
Yes, we're going to introduce you, Steve. It's Stefan, right?
Yes, Stephen or okay. Stefan is fine.
Okay, we're going to go ahead and introduce you in just a moment.
Okay.
Well, our next guest, Stefan Redding, says, we need to jump into the river of life, not fish from it. And with that quote, we can hardly wait to get started today. You're now listening to the International Taz and Paula Show, and I'm Paula.
And I'm Taz. Stephen has finished his second book entitled More or Less, which follows his first work entitled Something More. They both bring messages of hope, inspiration, and personal value of the longer and broader view of life and our place in it. What Stephen shares with us in his books is what his many deaths have taught him about life. He asks us to value our lives and care for our world. And this way we will come to know the ancient wisdom underlying life while being protected and comforted by touching base with our creation. Can you imagine over 6 decades, Paula, of living upon the earth, and every 4 or 5 of those years, Stefan would have another incredible experience of death that would carry him beyond the edge of this world into others and then back again? I could hardly put Stefan's story down, Paula, when I was reading it.
Well, it's really hard to believe, but I guess Stefan's here to tell us all about it. Stefan Redding was born on March 5th, 1947, and he was the fifth child of what would eventually be 15 children. You were learning from the beginning about differences, I bet. And he lived a typical life on a farm in the 50s. There were neither an adequate heating system nor indoor plumbing until he was 14 years old. And he was doing hard work on the farm most of the time. It was on this farm on a summer day in 1951, following Stefan's 4th birthday, that his life changed dramatically. During haymaking season, a farm tractor driven by his father crushed Stefan under the wheel. Life should have passed from him as his father, older brothers, and sisters looked upon what was left of his small body. Incredibly, during the panic drive towards the Gettysburg Hospital, his mother observed his jello-like body firm up on her lap. I could just, like tears in your eyes, seeing your son that way. 4 days later, Stefan was back on the farm as though the death-defying accident had never happened. After the accident, Stefan talked to whoever would listen about this other world that he actually was being able to see, that had 2 sons. This was the first of 14 extreme shock experiences over 50 years for Stefan that carried him to the very edge and even beyond the conditions of life as we know it, which he has drawn extensively from to illustrate and characterize the different worlds and realities of creation within his books. While these experiences have lent themselves to a very wondrous perception of who we are and why we are here, they have been very difficult, and until his recent years, it has been very challenging and confronting, I bet. can't imagine trying to tell people this. Stefan today brings multifaceted efforts to support others by seminars, essays, audio products, videos, and books to illustrate and clarify this unique worldview. Well, Stefan, we're going to have a full, interesting hour with you, so we are so happy to have you. Welcome.
Good. Well, thank you. And I'd like to tell you that we're coming from the woodlands of eastern Pennsylvania. There's a snow on the ground, cardinals at the feeder, and a holly tree with its beautiful berries out the window. So we have the situation well-centered here, and I'm happy to be on your show.
Well, I know that you work with nature a lot. Is this from the worlds that you had actually seen in your near-death experiences?
Well, I always had a fond attachment to the world of Earth, which I refer in light of my experiences. I differ this reality from others and refer to it as the existence experience because as lovely as it is, of course, we were all challenged and met with the issues of death and suffering. But the longer view of life, which I was given the viewpoint, suggests that the reason we're here is that we're one of a multiple flotation, if you will, or a multi-world journey through what was one time a very dark and dense place. And, you know, I was always troubled. I didn't come to this broader view until about the third edge experience. But I was always troubled by the explanation of why we're here, ranging from karmic debt to original sin, predestination, and a learning school, because fact is, as individual beings, we have a long and continuous history, though we might not remember it. But we're all the same age, and we all began upon this journey at the same very time, and it somewhat dovetails with the Big Bang. That, to me, is a very appropriate concept for that moment when life entered that dark sphere, or when the impulse of creation had made our way and opened up what would be an almost endless, but not endless, journey. And I like to say that life found us in the rocks, turned the key, and freed the locks.
Now, did you experience the Big Bang in one of your...
My first view, which was on probably my third journey out, was early in the journey itself when different worlds were more cohesive, closer together, and there was much more clarity. And it seemed that over time of this journey, that more darkness entered in between these different worlds. The different realities which belong to individual worlds became more difficult to connect with. But I think we've come to a time when the veil is being parted, and if we will and allow life, I think she will reacquaint us with our heritage. And so I can't say that I'd ever had a vision of that first moment. But interestingly enough, near death, when the dying experience meets you, it sounds and looks what one might imagine that first moment of creation to look, because the first impulse is a severe pain with either a very large shocking sound or a very bright, overwhelming light. And at four, my experience, I felt the pain. I felt and heard a huge, overwhelming sound. And then in the next moment, I found myself in another world that was distinctly different from ours, very beautiful. But my mother and brothers and sisters on the earth, even though it was a sunny day in that hayfield, they experienced a bright flash of lightning. And as they said it, it was as though the day had been dark. And dawn had risen. So it was quite overwhelming, and it's interesting, but those of us who have these verifiable near-death experiences, which I think, accepting for the rational mind, we could call them dying experiences, we all have pretty much the same conditions involved, the light, the familiar voices, a large room, and then often an opportunity to decide whether we would want to return to the earth or hang into that room. Most people, I spoke last year in San Diego to the Association for Near-Death Studies, and there were 14, 15 other people there who had these experiences. Like most of them, I was not able to talk about them for almost forever. And all of them, what separated me from them is they all decided to stay in this sense of overwhelming joy and beauty. And I look back into the world of Earth when I was beyond, and I always wanted to return. So I deeply love this world, and maybe that's why that chicken farmer was chosen to experience these multiple dying experiences. As my mother said, I was being made ready to be a voice for that which was forgotten.
Well, when I was reading your bio, it seemed like everybody kind of turned their head to your stories, except for your mother. She was always there to listen.
Well, that's absolutely correct. When I awoke, when I became conscious again after the accident, it was 4 days of Earth time, but seemed like forever where I was. But in the world of time, it had been 4 days, and I woke up suspended from the ceiling of the Anna B. Warner Hospital on two stainless rods, and my entire body had been wrapped in plaster of Paris. I don't think they knew what to do with me. The broken bones were so severe and numerous. But at any rate, when I did wake up, I started to scream to let me down, let me down. And at that point, they reluctantly, as my mother screamed also, they did cut me out of the cast. And I jumped down on the table beneath it, and I said to my mom, let's go home. So at that point, I kind of reminded a startled look, but my mother told his story much better at the surgeons and doctors who were standing just a weak knee against the walls. But we walked out of there, and I went home. In hindsight, maybe I shouldn't have gone home so soon, because what my brothers and sister and father met was this ghostly phantom-looking being who was essentially all black and blue with a lot of evident puncture holes in my body. And my brothers in particular had a hard time with that. I thought it was because my father had brought a shiny new log truck to me while I was in the hospital. But as my mother told me later, that the fact is that they were very afraid of me. And then 50-some years later, after I wrote the first book, I had an opportunity for one of the brothers who was part of the whooping session, almost biblical, the way they were sticking sticks in me to see if I would bleed. And he told me that they thought maybe I was the son of the devil or certainly an alien. But nonetheless, my mother said it is the limits of our mind, because what it can't believe, it won't accept. So I suspect in the near-death experience, this has been common throughout for people who have gone out and come back. And yet in us is this most beautiful revelation of the fact that we existed, certainly our consciousness and our presence existed before our bodies were built upon us. And that follows pretty simply from my many experiences, because you've satisfied all the conditions of death, but yet you still are. And we have the perception even of being on the table, we're being operated upon. Or I could look down and see my brothers crying. And when I say look down, I look out, who knows, where these spaces are. But that the fact that there are these other worlds with other realities is just simply so clear to those who've had these experiences. And that's quite giving in a way. And after 50-some years of being afraid to talk about it, my physician finally nudged me over the edge, and now I am talking about it, and I will make this the rest of my life's work to bring this message of more, remind people of their value, remind people that they've always been here, whether they want to believe that or not, and that leaving here can very easily be living on. It has so much to do with remaining, you know, within life, so that life knows us.
Stefan, were you given any specific message? Were they all the same every time you came back that you went over on the other side of death to come back and bring a message back to the world with?
Everyone was different, somehow different. I returned to Planeta twice, but as soon as it's natural to inquire and to wonder. So as soon as you could even manage, sense a question, it was answered. Part of the bigger, larger experience is to have, I think, a connection with what some people would refer to as universal intelligence. Nothing is hidden from the broader view of life. But I could never say that anybody specifically said to me, hey, here's a message you need to take back to your world. I think I got those messages, but I can't say that I actually received them directly. Just as in the dying experience, the near-death experience, most people will share that they felt they were in company, but most of them will also admit that they were alone. And so that was my experience. My experience was that I wasn't alone, but by the same token, I couldn't perceive another reality being or another worldly being when it came to the coming and going. When residing in these other worlds temporarily, yes, you were part of other designs, other forms. Some worlds were completely fluid, some liquid, some color, some gases, and others had form much like our own.
So most people that have this experience come back with a feeling that they have a purpose.
Oh, absolutely. Like when the purpose is to celebrate life, and that's the big message for your listeners, is that what ultimately distinguishes what will be next for us beyond this world is our relationship to life. And as I refer to, reimmerse ourselves in life's river. And living life is about the qualities of existence. It's about love and friendship. It's about caring. It's about openness. It's about co-creating, as everybody does when we play music and do artwork or work in our gardens and even bringing children into our world. At that point, we have connected with the sustaining something. I refer to it as Mysterio, but without it, our world is very deprived and would become a dying place. And part of what motivates me, Paula, to speak so clearly and to find the courage to speak out to the world is what's happening in our natural world. And trees I've always been a voice for trees, and never more so as once I ended my cocaine addiction and left the university, because I really understood the life in them. But now when we go into the eastern forest, half the species are dying quickly. A 3-million-year-old family of trees called red oaks are half gone in just a mere 10 years. And it doesn't matter where we look. In the east, we can look at the honeybees. Out west, you have the quaking aspen issues and the large pines. We have the coral in the oceans. And then the eastern brown bat has lost half of its population in the last 3 years. These are important and critical times. And so I refer to this as the time of subtraction. So my message and my call to everybody is all hands on deck. Come back. We're not asking for heavy lifting, but we are asking that you remember who you are. And who you are has more to do about living these qualities of life than it does about accumulating wealth, building big houses, or manipulating the world around you. And in fact, the biggest message is simplicity. Connect with, stay at home with yourself. Do not allow your fabric to be torn so that you're reaching out trying to fill a hole, but rather answer the call of life from where you are. And life will put something in front of you continuously, because what life is that deeper yearning. We Everybody has a different name. Some call it God. Some call it universal intelligence. There's many names. But it's a really deep yearning in our heart that we have not been separated from. And that yearning is to return again and feel the connection to the eternal sea of life. And you know what? And beyond this voyage, there is a destination. And that destination is that time when a day begins without an end. And those were the kind of impressions that are left with individuals like myself who had these brutal but beautiful and giving near-death experiences.
Whoa. That was beautifully said. Thank you. So how, as individuals, we have listeners that are listening to us, what would you suggest that they do to become in flow with the river of life?
To return to life's river? Now,
yes.
You have to understand this is a metaphoric river of sorts, but essentially, life's river is to connect directly to that underlying sustenance which has borne you, which carries you, which allows you these co-creative potential. The first and most important thing I would remind people is to look honestly at your life and make sure that you are valued. Do not tolerate relationships and work situations that do not regard you as a beautiful and living being. Do not allow yourself to be manipulated and used. And secondly, the connection happens almost spontaneously. At some point, you start to feel this gravitational pull towards what is right for you. And along with that, don't reach out to me or other people to make your life complete, because your truth is yours. The most that a wise person or a traveler like myself can give to people, and it is important, we can give you perspective. We can help you remember how it is and where to look. But you are a part of an individual journey. You are not alone. And as you walk and spend your time upon this world, you are the eyes and the hope of so many countless beings that came before you who made your life in this world possible. Now you have both an opportunity and an obligation to that inertia. And you must support it. You must make wise choices about where and how you spend your life. You remember the world around you and your neighbors, the feral cats and the thirsty tree. Remember that these are the qualities that have not only allowed your place in time to occur, but will also support you beyond this time. I swear, if you live in life, life will know you. If not, if you've been good at manipulating, outthinking, and taking from the world around you, she may not recognize you when you pass that time over. I've been in both realms. I've been in worlds that we really wouldn't want to talk about or be there. Because, you see, from the get-go, this journey of life has been a tussle, if you will. It's been a struggle between the powers of more or life and the power of less, which we can refer to as the darkness. This is not a classic evil versus good scenario, but it's more about two incompatible forces, both awesome in their own right. And I suspect that in that first moment of when creation entered that dark place, our purpose was to illuminate the darkness and come to understand it. Well, ages have come and gone, and we're still here. And right now, we're kind of stuck, actually. And this time of subtraction is surrounding us. And it's moving in from all sides. But what we can do about it is a great deal. And what we can do about it is to remember to celebrate life. Just insist that joy and satisfactions in our everyday world, the need for all of these extravagance, whether our football teams win or lose, won't be such a big deal anymore. But the song in your heart, the call of your children, the bird feeders. I mean, these will be loving and giving signals. I listened briefly to one of your interviews a few weeks back, or maybe months, And there was an individual in there who was a chiropractor, and he spoke about all of a sudden how he came to a place where his patients could feel his healing powers, even though he wasn't touching them. And that is the kind of thing that occurs to us as we reacquaint ourselves with what truly matters, because the life's river is there in abundance. If we will use it, she will come and support us. But does our lives become easy? No. We're in this together. There's a great deal of work to do. And as soon as you have accomplished one thing, life will put something else in front of you. And she'll say, please lift these beings up.
Well, that goes along with being able to communicate with the nature around us. Because I know you've worked with trees, but I mean being able to communicate with the trees or the animals or the plants, allowing their, I don't know if I could say feelings or their,
sure,
yeah, feelings,
sure,
to be
we
able
have
to,
feelings,
to
they
communicate.
Have feelings.
Right. I mean, I feel that way. I feel as though they have feelings, but I mean to be able, not that many people take the time to listen.
Right, and that is the indication of how we have left our connection to life and the flow of life or life's river. And at some point along our way, maybe we could say 2,000 years ago, but at some point we deviated dramatically from the earlier peoples, the indigenous peoples' relationship to their natural world, where they revered and celebrated the rivers and the trees and the cultures around them. And everything was seen to have value. As a matter of fact, which Christianity has come to snicker at, but at that point, these native people found their gods to be at their hands, at their hands' reach. And they lived in a way as though they were always being watched. And I don't think there's anything wrong with that, because I think that is how it is. If God works for you, then we need to remember that we live in this being, and that in fact, when we are expressing life, we are in his garden, and we are celebrating with this being. But the distant heaven concepts, and as though this world is just a place that's dangerous and we're passing through it, and that we have some type of special dominion or manifest destiny, that has been the ruin to so much of that beautiful connection in the ancient wisdom. The same wisdom that guides the salmon over the world's oceans and the butterflies' migration. It's not any different than that. The early people lived, I think, more closely with this intuitive sense of connection. And at some point along the way, humankind have kind of separated ourselves and used the power of our intellect and our technologies and kind of implied that we would go it alone. Oh, of course, God was important, but he was out there in heaven somewhere. And another big problem was we decided it was a he. And everybody knows there's more connection in the she's. So at any rate, you know, these just touch on what got in our way. But the fact that we are disconnected is very real. But I don't mean to apply the issue today is strictly a matter of the human hand and mind, because the struggle during the journey of life has always been there. Even early on when we were etheric and then fluid in nature before we took up form, life had its conflicts and struggles with that overwhelming darkness that it was journeying through. As the journey changed and time has changed, life has changed. It's one of the beautiful qualities about the living experience. It's very adaptable and adept and flexible. So we come to a time today where, in form, we represent really this amazing subjective identity or self that can come to know existence, which is really kind of beautiful. And as nice and special as these other worlds were, I have to say I never saw one more beautiful, more diverse, more color, more sensuality, potentially at least, more passion, than we here upon this world. It's a beautiful, beautiful, beautiful place.
And we tend to take it for granted.
Don't we?
Yeah.
And that gets back to the question about feelings in trees and in our pets. But, since I've had these experiences from time to time, and I know this will raise a little skepticism, but we actually have some pictures and many eyewitnesses. But at times of certain celebrations, beings have presented themselves from other worlds. And whether they were wood gnomes that my wife and I sold, these little people who came and went from a shagbark hickory, or whether they were these gorgeous wild turkeys that were twice as big as a turkey and had no fear and came up to us while we were using chainsaws. Or this fall we had a miniature turtle just show up on our living room floor. The year before we had a flower blooming in the ice on the lake in full bloom, petals of gold. And to me this is an expression of these other realities or worlds peeking into our space and trying to somehow identify with the structures and forms that exist here. But it's incredibly comforting because it reminds us that it's a much, much bigger world. And the realities are not only those that we can glean from our rationality and our cognition. As a matter of fact, when we think of something as simple and yet as divine as water, it only takes a few degrees different to separate the different realities of water. At one point we have liquid, a few degrees we've got ice. At one point we have liquid, a few degrees we have gas. And to people who never knew of ice and snow, that would be a shock. So I remind people that some of these realities are so close that you can touch them. It's almost as though we were driving down a road and we got tired of a radio station, so we changed the dial. All of a sudden we have an entirely different experience, but yet it was only a few frequencies away from what we had been listening to. And I think this is another one of the beautiful things about committing our life to celebrating life, because there is life beyond what's immediately outside our window. There are other windows. And I remind people, there's more than one room in their house of life, allowing that existence is the now room, but their house of life is much larger. And the important thing, again, is to allow life to know you, so she will be there.
One time, because I think working with nature is magical, and one time I put in a vegetable garden, and I asked the plants where they wanted to be planted. And after everything was completed, I could actually hear them chattering among themselves.
Yeah.
That
absolutely, and oftentimes the chatter is an inner chatter, and it's a strong intuitive knowing. So I'm always intrigued when I hear different voices from trees, I don't try to decipher what the language is, but I try to just listen, and the way to touch nature is to live in nature or spend time. I advise people as another to create a little sanctuary of their own, whether it's in their backyard or even in a room if they're in an urban area or a park, and go to that space kind of routinely and allow yourself no outside distractions and allow yourself 10 or 15 minutes just to be there and reflect. And pretty soon something unusual will tap at your window. And in the beginning, you're going to take a deep breath and you're going to be afraid and your mind's going to say, oh, what's that? Or your imagination's talking. But you know what? This world is so dynamic. Life is so dynamic. If you think you saw something or think you heard something, you probably did.
It's like the little people in Ireland.
And we saw two people here, my wife and I, years ago, right here outside my cabin in the woods. And they had their own conversation going. The mom was scolding the daughter, and they were beautifully Elizabethan kind of dressed. Maybe mom was 2 feet, and the daughter might have been 18 inches. We didn't understand the language, but the scolding was unbelievable. And as the door opened in the next hickory, and they were going into it, the mom whacked the little girl over the butt with a loaf of bread. And it was amazing because my wife and I, we'd never seen anything quite like this. And we ran into the cabin and we actually bumped our heads together as we both simultaneously said, "Did you see what I saw?" And we recounted our perceptions, and they were exactly alike.
You know what's really interesting about this is that when you do see something that's not of this world or, so to speak, that comes about, it makes you stop in your tracks. It actually stops the process, and you begin going, "Wow, that was really something. That was really a miracle," you know. And it does. It stops you in your tracks. It makes you think of life much differently.
It truly does.
So precious.
And even though I have been a purveyor of the unusual since 4, it still takes my breath away.
Yeah.
It absolutely does. When we found that little miniature turtle on my living room floor in September, we had had this fall festival here at our place. And it was really such a beautiful energy that the next day, just to indicate that we couldn't find one piece of trash or cigarette butt out of 150 people. I mean, the consciousness of that moment, of that gathering, was such. And life gifted us two ways. One, with the turtle, which is really an earth symbol. But this turtle was the size of a nickel. And nobody could really identify, you know, what type of turtle it was, but it was a living thing that you could touch. In fact, I'll have pictures on the website soon. But in the same day, one of my chickens laid an egg with a sunrise and a sunburst on it. I mean, hard to believe, but again, you know, the natural world around us is probably more keenly and deeper rooted in the mystery of life than we as human beings are, in the sense that we have chosen to take over and do so much in our own likeness and call ourselves, you know, higher or God's children. Well, then what's all the rest, you know? But nonetheless, we have created for ourselves this existential kind of aloneness, which we feel. And yet, instead of turning back to life's river and the mysteries of life and being comfortable there, we have reached out to take more from the natural world around us, to take green out of the world and put green in our pockets. And because this is a hole in our heart and soul, it can never be managed or filled that way. But the consequence is at a huge cost to our world and to one another. Because what we've done is we've become good at manipulating, but we're not good at sensing and seeing the wonder of what we're taking away. And that's perhaps the sad part.
We're
going to darkness's
our...
bidding without realizing the consequences.
Well, even like genetically changing seeds and fish.
Right. And that's one of the hugest distinctions for your listeners. The difference is that in life, we accept what life puts in front of us. And the other option, which I think is the very wrong one, is we try to control life, or we try to control the circumstances that will greet us the next day. And when we live that way, our fears from yesterday and our concerns about tomorrow rob us of the experience of now or today. So we're never really at home with the beat of our heart. We're always scheming, worrying, fearing, hanging on to old issues, and hanging on to outworn beliefs, because behind it all, we're not comfortable with who and where we are. We're just one step or more removed from that sense of basic trust and faith in this wondrous thing that began us and who's carried us. And again, so much of that is to this new world view, or to see ourselves as being here as a member of part of life's journey, sellers of fortune, if you will. And an interesting thing about these journeys out of this realm where you would get the bigger view of life, I pictured a good way to describe this is though these different worlds are on an arrow. And Earth and existence represents the very point or the tip of the arrow. So yes, the illumination is not great and much has been forgotten. And separating the darkness and blasting the mass or the matter open is hard work. So in a way, we can call ourselves the jackhammers, you know, because we're living. But again, if we have the basic trust of knowing that we're not alone, that many have come before us and have done beautifully what we need to do, that there's great value in that. And then also to remember that under no terms is death the end. There is much, much more. So stand in, celebrate your life, joy in one another. If you're not valued, you need to change the picture. And that's where courage is called forth. But courage is another one of those beautiful qualities of life.
So, first of all, we have to value ourselves.
Of course.
To be able to be with one, as you might say.
Right, but see, they go together. The great, I think, testimony for today from living here forward and to achieve the greater reach of life and healing is to follow the two perspectives. One is you have to honor the life in you. So that's where you need to go and say, am I being valued? And also, am I staying at home? Am I mindful of the gaps? How do I feel when one episode ends and something else might begin? I often reflect on this as I fall asleep or wake up in the morning. It's a great time to just for a moment say, well, how do I feel? And if I don't feel well, then I need to be suspicious, because even in life's most difficult moments, she's still there, and we should sense that. So once we're honoring the life within us, simultaneously comes caring for the world around us or caring for the life around us. And if people start putting those two together, it's a wondrous experience. The fear of death is diminished. We stay at home. We find that in place of abundance, we want simplicity. And it all starts to change. And many people are doing that already. You know, I think, Paula, that there is a sense, and as my mother said, that this is probably why the time that I was chosen somehow to be a messenger to remind people of the bigger picture, because she always felt that there was a timing, a cusp, if you will, that one dispensation was ending, and it was really critical that we got together on this, and I agree with that. And then since she passed away, the time of subtraction has really taken in deeply, and it's just impossible for living, caring people to look at their natural world and not be suspicious, not be concerned. But again, we all do it from where we're at. It's to celebrate life in a divine way and to remind people that the divine and the ordinary should be the same. So that which we do on a day-to-day basis should always be done with conscious intention. And that is the ultimate, for me at least, explanation of spirituality. Not some higher, aloof consciousness, but rather the expression of our love and friendship for the world around us and for one another.
Now, when you were writing your books, did the information just flow in?
The first book, it just flowed. My doctor, she said, after the beast thing, after I went into a 10-day coma from 150-some yellow jackets, and then I came back, and she says, hey, look, you were talking in different languages, and this is it. She said, you're going to write a book, and her name's Dr. Kuhar. She actually did the foreword to the book. So she said she was going to give up a day of her practice every week and work with me on getting some words together. So we did that once, and then the next week I had written it. I mean, it was on just rough paper, and I gave her the rough paper, and she called me back about 2 in the morning. She says, I just got off the toilet. She said I couldn't get up. So that one went really fast, because that was just the message of something more, just to remind people the nature of these other worlds a little bit, remind us of the wonder of who we are, to remind people that we're not alone and that we do, and that we are the eyes and hopes of that which came before us. There's no accidents here. That, and once you're on this journey, you're not getting off until that point of destination. And then from that, there were a lot of questions. And so the second book, which is a much longer read, was written to answer these questions. So I was often reflecting out, not just doing it forward. So the first one was really easy and quick, and the second one was a little more grueling. But the second one deals more intimately with the seeing, the difference between becoming lost to life as opposed to answering the question of who we are. And by the way, if I could interrupt at this, if I could suggest at this point, in that second big book, a chapter for probably most of your readers would be the chapter on Who Are We? And it talks about this honoring your life and caring for life, but it also reminds us that the most important thing we can do as human beings today is to accept the role of a lamplighter, that to remember that there are many people out there who essentially are the same as we are, but have forgotten the wonder of life. So by our finding satisfaction in our gardens and with our artwork and our children and animals and trees, that naturally just reflects out, and it fires a wick in others. And when we're allowed to give the people around us more life, guess what? We get more life for ourselves, and so does the earth, and all of her many life systems celebrate by degree. And this is how we're going to resolve these difficult and subtracting times. And by the way, the time of subtraction simply means that the power of the taking forces is overwhelming the strength of the living, giving forces. And you know, we're experiencing that in our own families. I mean, 30 years ago, nobody could have ever perceived that autism would be going off the charts like it is. And how is it that children can't be born into a world through the natural process of co-creation without having their wiring intact? Well, again, when the vigor is low in a world or in a life system, the taking forces of misalignment, fear, they just get a stronger and stronger foothold. So look around at your world, the taking insects, the vines tearing the forest down, the pathogens, declined pathogens are out of control. It's huge, and yet life has, as I said, going through this before, she's not a quitter, but she is surely calling out to us to hear her plea. She has now raised her voice to the level of a gale. And probably, and I hate to be prophetic like this, but in the very near future, there will be a huge, huge number of human beings who will effectively migrate, for better or worse, but it'll be a hectic situation for a while, but there will be a whole lot less of us. And that's already been pretty much determined, I think. It's another one of those strange, unique abilities of having left time temporarily during these dying experiences. You do have the longer view. But for anybody to say that this thing is over and there's no sense in lifting our spirits in our common open hand, they're very much wrong. Nothing has been ultimately decided. We have been upon this journey for a long time. We're at the end of this huge darkness. It's coming close. There's reason to celebrate, but there's also reason to know the difference. So choose life.
Now, Stephen, when you did your book, let me ask you, when you were writing, was there anything that came out in that writing that you were just going, wow, I never thought of this before?
As a matter of fact, I hate to, it sounds a little smug, but when I read back over the books, I said, I can't believe I wrote this. So you're right. I think that life in its many multiple ways had found, I think the right questions were asked by different people, and I think sometimes my hand was moved for me because I'm not really an educated person, and the concepts were pretty beautifully, I thought. And it was, at the International Association for Near Death, it was a large group, and a great percentage of them are scientists, and, who are really trying to get their hands around what happens during the dying experience. And they really couldn't throw any questions my way that I couldn't deal with. And so it was pretty interesting. But I don't feel alone. I feel like I've been protected, and yet I just simply really joy in this world of existence. Even though I, like you, our bodies will melt away, but it gives me great satisfaction to know that there are more rooms in our house of life. And some of us will even want to come back and help ferry this world along for its last hurrah here. But there's just so much a beautiful possibility that awaits for us. The wonder is just not really definable. And maybe that's why those other 15 near-death experiencers still can't talk about what they saw and met. I'll never forget the lady from outside of Big Sur who was all crispy. She had been passed over during a fire cleanup, a brush fire cleanup, and threw her in with the dogs and the other dead bodies when they were returning back, but she wasn't totally dead, but she still shows the signs of the crispy skin, and she can't cry and can't smile. But let me tell you, when you look in her eyes, they are just deep as the deepest ocean and so blue. And you know, she knows, and when our eyes met, we both knew that she will serve out her time here and do it in the most beautiful way possible. But she was one of, nobody else there, incidentally, wanted to come back. And some of them told the cartoon stories to me of how they were hanging on to the door. And they felt like they were kicked back, you know. But it's very interesting scenarios. But, you know, really when you think about the phenomena, it's amazing how we all experience six or seven of these same exact things, which is what really gives science a hard time with this, because they would like to nix it as this or that. But when you can say that you've been flatlined and you look back and you know what the surgeons were talking about in your room, that's kind of hard to just excuse that as imagination.
So do you think we go on to a different realm, a different world after we leave this world?
Well, here's what my experiences have shown. Some move right into another room in their house of life, but most of us seem to go to a space, kind of a phantom realm, where we wait, and eventually, sooner or later, and it's hard to put it in time concepts because now we're outside of time, but someone or a hand comes for us or a door opens. And most of us, I feel, are going to need rest and rejuvenation. And that seems to happen in a cocoon-like state, you know, where you're taken care of and you're rested. And others, I think, reconnect with loved ones and spend further time in these adjoining realities. I have to tell you this story. Oh, but by the way, many of my experiences in that room, just it seems like this big, dark, dense door opens, and there's a big vacuum sound every so often, and just many phantoms just float into the darkness. And people have asked me, do they suffer? I don't think they suffer, because I don't think they lived. And I think that the darkness knows them as its own. One thing that helps people understand why it's so easy to get caught up in manipulation and taking and sequestering of life is that literally life turned the keys and freed us up. So our bodies and even our thought forms are often derived from the very mass or the matter in which the light of life entered. And that's one of the most beautiful things about life, the way it can manifest movement, birth, creation, art out of what was once very static and dense. So I've never been in a world where the frequency levels are so slow or so low, but maybe that's part of this unique individuality experience. So constantly aligning ourselves with the qualities of life will make our inner being joyful. It just does. It just feels right. And the physical part that melts away will be left here. It's just that simple. It doesn't get a sleigh ride to some rarefied air, I don't think. That's not been my experience. I've always been able to separate during these dying experiences my beingness and my consciousness from my body. I could always look back and see what it was doing or where it was laying or that it was frozen in the ice or whatever. But I don't think, I think it's misgiving for people to think that somehow our body is preserved in some heaven or some sacred place. I think that what really matters is the echoes, the ripples of our being. And I think that's where another life is added to it from one of these other worlds. So
that's,
I think, cool. There's many options, and it's not all the same, because I've gone out there a number of times, and like I said, except for twice, they were all different, some not so pleasant. But let me briefly tell you about this interesting second experience where I drowned and was found frozen into a farmer's fence, and he cut me out. And I woke up being thawed out by his fireplace in the midst of a blizzard in March. But during my out time, I entered this realm, low illumination, but it felt really good. And I looked back through what seemed to be this endless room, and there were literally millions of heads, just heads. And then all of a sudden I'm being scolded. And here's my Aunt Gertrude, who had passed a couple years earlier, being scolded for missing the school bus, which what led to my trying to make it home through the blizzard and then falling in the river. And I met my cousin Keith there, who had recently died from leukemia, and he was so happy to see me. And my Uncle Bobby, who had just passed away. And I could smell his corncob pipe, you know, even in this sequestered, low illumination reality, which was a joint to the earth. And from that, I learned a whole lot from that excursion, even though I was only nine. But I really did, I got a big grasp on how it is for those people. And essentially how it is that they remain suspended until the journey of the earth is resolved. And then they again will take their place in this reality or another one. And by the way, friends, a lot of these people find this this temporary place of residence in trees and plants. So, and also in the sky and in the water. So when you think you've heard sometimes a voice, it may have been some of your kin, and they may be speaking in a low voice in any way that they can from these repositories, which can be trees. Trees are great repositories. People, past people can heal in trees and then help the tree manage its life. So it's a beautiful, intricate, woven fabric.
Wow. So do you ever, do people ever go into like a classroom atmosphere on the other side?
I don't think so. At least that wasn't my experience.
Mm-hmm.
I think that we're given everything we need as we move through the experiences of life and realities. Therefore, some people would say, well, that's why we're here. We have to learn something. That's why we're here to suffer and die. Or that's why we experience individuality and physicality. I don't think so. This worldview says, no, this is what life has become in us with our individuality, and our bodies and our minds are the way we experience existence. And this is how we are a part of showing life, expressing God. We do it right here in this wondrous world of Earth, the land of much diversity and color and passion and sensuality. So the one thing that we need to diminish is the hold of our cognition over us and our intellect. And the thing that we need to encourage is our sensuality, our passions, our love. And from that, we will gain basic trust. So I also want to remind people that if they go to the website, I do a video every month or so on these lessons. And I had made so many contacts out in San Diego that people out there enjoying them. So if they sign up on it, they just get a free video if they want, which is I think exciting. And there's already a lot of videos on the website regarding some of these issues. They're about 10 minutes each.
Well, Stephen's website is Stephen, Stephen Redding, Redding.com. And his two books, the first one is Something More, and his second book is more or less. So again, Stephen's website, StephenRedding.com.
You know, this is really, I've sat through basically a lot of the show and not asked many questions. I just love what you're saying. You know, for me, Stephen, I guess the excitement of life that we have here and bringing love to others in whatever way we can, that is the joy maybe that we come here to bring for people.
Absolutely. And it's also doing what life is asking of us. And so I want to remind people, we're not asked to do the impossible or heavy lifting. We're asked to do the ordinary well. And the ordinary is already beautiful. And but yet, I guess because we're really looking for, you know, to fill a tear in the fabric or sew it, that we're looking past all that is of life and love right at our elbows, and we're being sucked into these the entertaining worlds and vicarious satisfaction and a world of stuff, and we're inundated. So unless we make the conscious choice to say, okay, if it's valuing me and it's doing something nice to me, then that's okay. But still, I have value in and of myself, and I represent this incredible journey. And there's other beings, maybe you don't immediately connect with them, but they've been there and they are there. And it's a wondrous kind of opportunity and obligation we have to nurture what they've begun. And they have walked the deck of this earth long before we came, and they are there. And let me tell you, when you start playing with that sanctuary a little or spending some time, they will start to look in. I suspect some of them are already looking in through your dreams, which is a great way of seeing. Never interpret or accept the interpretation of your mind. Our minds are very limited, and we have so abused them to manipulate and control the world. But the mind is probably the seat of the tentacle, if you will, because from our minds, when overly used, comes the control that seems to throw the bridles upon us. It closes the gate. Our life becomes a small meadow, and the fence to more is woven deeper and deeper around us. So be suspicious of what the mind's saying you. If you've been touched and cry or laugh in your dream, just let it go with that. Don't get up, try to remember, and ask your mind to explain where you were, because it won't know. It'll give you something, but your mind doesn't go through those fences, just as your mind gets cut off in these near-death experiences very quickly. So what's left with you are deep impressions, reflections, and very sensual experiences. And that's why people, when you in near-death experiences, they just cry a lot. Something deep in them that houses close to their heart, and we call that passion, just pours forth because, you know, you can't touch it with words, and it almost seems to be a trespass on the experience if you try to define it that way.
So that's why
my words are often kind of misconstrued and a little bit crooked, because I'm trying to grope with them as well as exchange perceptions.
You know, I forgot, Paula, we're over the hour.
Me too.
Oh, we got involved. Oh, my gosh.
Well, thank you, Stefan, so much for being with us.
Well, you better cut me off then. But listen, if your listeners enjoyed it, we can do more sometime. And often I'm out on the road, so I'm open to speaking to people. So just keep all that in mind. And I sense that you folks are a very gracious host, and so I compliment you on what you're doing in life. And I peeked into my daughter set me up on a couple of your interviews, and just keep up what you're doing, because we're all doing something, and we're all part of it. And the end result of this will be quite precious and wondrous, I'm sure.
Thank you.
Oh, it
so
is.
Much.
Thank you.
All
the
right.
Hour was wonderful. Thank you. Bye-bye.
See ya.
See ya.
This is 91.5.